Hey, it's Spencer, and welcome to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff. Woohoo! The podcast where we talk about gay stuff and discuss LGBTQ plus history. You know me as the guy who keeps the sound in check and gets the Let's Talk About Gay Stuff episode out each week. You may also know me from our Spoopy podcast, bringing you the latest and greatest in true crime, horror, anything morbid, and our Rupee podcast, bringing you live updates on televised drag competitions. But before we talk about some of the gay stuff, we of course have to thank our sponsor, Big Bone. A recent Gallup poll shows that Americans have reported feeling stress and worry and anger in the highest levels in over a decade. While we are growing more and more aware of the effects of our stress on our bodies and minds, we may not have considered the effects that our stress can have on our pets. According to studies, there is a synchronization between stress hormones in humans and their dogs. If you are a dog parent, you probably know that your pup is very good at reading your body language and can quickly pick up on how you're feeling. We're always working to reduce our own stress in any way that we can, but what about the anxiety we may have passed on to our dogs? Big Bones has a solution. CBD has been shown to help reduce stress and anxiety in both humans and dogs, and Big Bones has your dog covered. Made from organic, human-grade ingredients and full-spectrum hemp oil, their bones may offer some relief to your anxious pup. Check out BigBones.com for more information on CBD for dogs and other benefits it may provide. Big Bones offers free shipping on all orders over $25, and you can save 15% using promo code GAYSTUFF15. Big Bones is LGBTQ-owned and operated and is based in Houston, Texas. Big Bones proudly donates 10% of all profits to no-kill shelters in the U.S. Need your bones ASAP or want to support small businesses? Big Bones are now available at Man Ready Mercantile in the Houston Heights or at Man Ready Mercantile on South Congress in Austin. Let's talk about some gay stuff. We didn't want to leave you empty-handed or cut you off cold turkey, so lucky you, we're still giving you the flavor of the week in LGBTQ plus history while the guys are on a break. Going back to episode one, way back when the podcast was just a little baby. So this week in LGBTQ plus history, the CDC used the term AIDS for the first time in 1982. And we're going to go back to episode one because in the first episode, the guys talk about when the first AIDS cases were reported by the CDC. And they discuss how the AIDS crisis rippled through the gay community in the 1980s. So let's take a listen to where the guys talk about the impact of AIDS on the LGBTQ plus community, how it stole so many lives and so much talent from us, and the need to remain vigilant in the effort to stop the spread of the disease.
Oh, shit.
Perfect. Let's
start over. That's a good way to start our first episode. All right, so we are here for our first episode of Let's Talk About Gay Stuff.
Yay!
Woo-hoo! All right, so welcome to our new podcast. It's called Let's Talk About Gay Stuff, where we talk about gay stuff. So we're three guys, Tony.
Kendall.
You want to say hi, Tony?
Hi, Tony. No.
Kendall.
Oh, hi. Yes, Kendall.
And me, Thomas. We're new at this. We're friends, and we enjoy spending our Friday nights nerding out and debating about current events, politics, and history, and pop culture. So we thought, why not put microphones in front of us and a glass of wine and see where this goes? So this should be entertaining. What you'll hear in our podcast is us reflecting about the week in gay history. So we'll talk about today. This episode's going to air on June the 2nd. So we're going to talk about the week that's coming, June 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, right? So you'll hear a little history and a lot of fun as we discuss impactful events and people in the context of how it affected the LGBT community and culture as well as society in general, because we think we've had a significant impact on society. And then we'll also give our own take in terms of how it affected our own journeys through life. So just a disclaimer, right? We're not historians, but we do enjoy studying this stuff. We'll get our fun perspective and hopefully a lot of humor as we talk about the topics, events, and people we discuss. So we are very excited to be, you know, hosting this podcast, and we hope the folks that are listening enjoy it just as much as we do. So
yes.
All right. So before we get too far into this, a little we got to pay the bills. So our sponsor, of course, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Economy Works, a freelance talent network that connects professionals with project work. So if you're a company that needs help with writing job descriptions, conducting market analysis, managing your social media platforms, Economy Works has an extensive talent network of freelance professionals ready to help you do more with less. Economy Works. When we work, the economy works. All right, so we've got the business out of the way. So this month is Pride Month. We're kicking off Pride Month.
What do we?
That'll be fun. This will. I'm always looking forward to Pride Month. I didn't like truly embrace the whole celebration of Pride Month until like the last few years. I've had a lot of fun in all the parades and events and whatnot.
Boy, have you embraced it since?
I sure have. Do you remember the first Pride?
Boy, have you
parade?
Embraced
you won't remember it because you were.
Tipsy.
A little tipsy. But the first Pride event I went to was here in Houston back in 2009, and you had your friends come in from Louisiana.
Oh, God.
What a mess. Do you remember that messy
no.
event? You don't remember because it was pretty.
Thankfully, he blacked out. Event.
If the story begins with your friends came in from Louisiana, I will not remember it.
Yes.
As a standing rule.
Yeah.
So Kendall at one point we're hailing a taxi which was hard to do in Houston there are no taxis in Houston. So thank goodness for
pre-Uber.
Pre-Uber. And so we're trying to hail a taxi. We luckily find one. I'm trying to get everyone in. Kendall's deciding to hail his own taxi, which happens to be a police car.
Ooh.
Try to get in the back seat.
Which you probably wanted.
He probably let you.
I'm surprised you didn't end up in the backseat of a cop car later that night because there was a lot of drama. Me and his best friend Martha, we got into a little bit of back and forth, and there's a famous line from there that we like to use, don't get so emotional about everything. And so
the reason is because I took off running when I realized it was a cop car and got
lost.
This was
Montrose, all in Montrose?
Yeah.
Okay. No, this was Midtown. And then I woke up on someone's lawn in River Oaks.
Well, no, you what? Actually made it. You actually got into a cab. You got in a cab with Martha. And so you guys get in this cab, wind up in front of JR's, where they used to have the parade, right, in Montrose. And so you get out, and then all of a sudden you run for who knows where you're running to, running off to nowhere.
Towards my destiny.
And that's where – and you got lost that night. We didn't find him until way, way, in the middle of the night. But that's where I – and because I went into a different car than Martha, that had a different cab, I got there first. And so when she shows up, I'm like, hey, where's Kendall? Where's my boyfriend? Which, by the way, we're not boyfriends anymore. But I said, where's Kendall? And she's like, I don't know. And she starts breaking down. And I was like, Martha, stop crying. But I was like, what do you mean you don't know? Like, how do you
Did
lose –
Did you stay in the cab?
No, we got out of the cab and started running. Towards River Oaks, which was not. We lived in Midtown, so it was running in the opposite direction.
I do remember knocking on people's doors and asking
for
water.
Oaks.
Yeah. And saying, I just need water, please.
Did anyone answer?
No, but they turned their lights off.
Yeah. So he winds up on a yard. He winds up at, in River Oaks, the River Oaks Shopping Center. That's where he winds up. Again, we live in Midtown Houston.
Yeah, wow.
So on the opposite direction, which.
And that's not a short hike from Montrose.
All right. These are all allegations.
And we had some other friends that also got lost that night as well. And again, we live in Midtown. So it's like walk towards the direction of the tall buildings downtown. But no, everyone.
Walked
away from downtown. It's just like. So it was pretty. Pretty epic.
Ah, memory.
Epic. One thing I know, I broke my phone that night because I couldn't get a hold of him, so I threw it at the wall. I'm not violent, but I was like, I was frustrated.
Okay, I'm finished with the story.
But no, because it gets
Anyways.
Better. He leaves a voicemail on mine and Martha's phone. He's like, help, I need water. Because he was dehydrated. It's like 90%.
But you had no idea where he was.
I was roofied in my own home.
Yeah. No idea where he was.
By yourself. You're like, Rufy.
Martha finally gets a hold of him and goes and picks him up. And yeah, the next day, all he can remember is that he lost his camera. And so,
okay, but that's on season two of Let's Talk About Gay Stuff.
Yeah, he lost his
so
camera.
So then Thomas and Kendall are like, oh my God, I love Pride. Let's do this every year.
Right. So we did. We did fake out Martha one year or two, a couple of years later in D.C. There was a cop car and we had to take a picture in front of it. You were getting arrested and she got nervous. We sent it to her. I sent her the picture and I said, help. And she was like, oh my gosh, she was ready. She was like calling people, her friends. She's like, I got to get to, she was living in Louisiana at the time. She's like, I got to get to DC. So that was that. And then, some fun times at Pride. You guys have any fun Pride stories?
That wasn't a fun one.
That was fun for me.
I never actually had any crazy pride stories. I mean, I've had plenty of crazy stories.
You have no pride?
I've been to pride. I've had fun, but it's never been super crazy for me.
Out of town prides? Have you done those? Like,
I've only done Houston prides.
Tony, do you ever get like knockout drunk?
Oh yes,
crazy. Really? I don't think I've ever seen you. I think that's because I get there right before.
Or because you pass out before he does.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I've been there, just not on pride. But yes. No.
What does drunk Tony look like?
Well, this is my worst extreme case ever. So, well, I mean, actually, I feel like, you know, I probably look and act like any other drunk person. But my most extreme case ever was, it was my friend's birthday. We went to dinner and, like, started doing tequila shots at dinner, kept going out. And I basically woke up in shorts and a t-shirt that weren't mine on some bathroom floor. I'm like, where the fuck am I? Let me get out of here. No keys, no wallet. I walk outside. I'm like, no idea where the fuck I am. Let me go back in and just sleep on this bathroom floor. So I am sleeping on the bathroom floor. And in the morning, this was in the middle of the night. So in the morning, I hear upstairs. So I go up and I'm like, so an ex-boyfriend's best friend, I was in his house. And I was like, what the fuck happened? And basically he goes, you were leaving the bar, walking to your car, and you were staggering. And so I was leaving the bar. He was fine. He goes, he cannot drive home. And so I went up to you and was like, hey, you need to go home, like, with me or whatever. And so I was like, okay. And apparently I, like, on the way, I opened up the window, threw up. So he threw my clothes in the laundry, got me, you know, put me in the downstairs bathroom.
You definitely had sex with him.
No. No, he's not that type.
Was I that friend?
It's like, oh.
That was my craziest ever. But it wasn't on Pride. Just a random break. But yes, I've been there, done that.
It was a Monday.
Yeah. Oh, it was a Tuesday.
I haven't been to that many Pride. Kendall, any besides D.C. and Houston, you go to? You were there. Were you in San Francisco when?
Yes, I was in San Francisco the day gay marriage Supreme Court ruling came.
No way.
Which was also San Francisco Pride.
Oh, no way.
But it didn't feel any more crazy than normal.
Yeah.
It was just a normal crazy day. I think people expected it to happen, but it was still a lot of fun.
I remember Houston Pride that week. So Houston was like the weekend after, and it was crazy. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that was it. Yeah. But I don't know if it got crazy because I went to one bar, sat on a bar stool, was there like all night, and then made my way back to the hotel.
How boring.
I know, right? I have boring. More interesting nights on like random Wednesdays.
Tuesday nights. All right, so before we get into our topics, because the way our podcast will flow, we'll try to get to three events or people or significant things that happen in LGBT history, because we do, I mean, we want this to be fun, but we want it to be informative, and so we'll talk about, again, things that happen this week in gay history. So that's going to be historical events, that'll be legislative events, that'll be famous people being born, or famous people saying something, or not famous, but impactful people to the community, and just things that happened that affected pop culture that have some relevance in the LGBT community. So before we get there for our first topic, anything else happened this week that you guys want to chit-chat about? Tony's got his new job that's working.
Yeah, so I pretty much didn't do anything but work. Well, you know I know everything about the Golden Girls.
Oh, yes.
My friend Andrea also knows everything about the Golden Girls. So, there was Golden Girls trivia last night, so we're all pumped. We're like, got it. There were probably like about 15 teams.
That's a lot of teams for Golden Girls stuff.
We took fourth place. My friend Andrea, literally, I feel when she woke up today, felt like Hillary Clinton after losing to Trump, and she's going to write a What Happened book. She was so dismayed that we took fourth place, and we only missed.
But what about her emails?
Right. There were eight rounds of probably 12 questions each, and we missed six.
Six.
Yeah, and some of them were like, you have to, you know, there were like three parts. And so out of all that, like, we got two of the three. So we missed six things out of, and we took fourth place.
Wow.
Those bitches were fucking competitive.
Who were the nerds that got, are the people with no lives?
I actually don't really know. There was this one table of six people that looked, I would say three of them were gay men, three were straight women, and they probably looked
same thing.
Late 30s to mid 40s, and I would have thought they got lower than us, but I do not know who they were. But no.
Were there a lot of gay people? Was it at a gay bar? Or?
It was actually at a straight bar. Oh, so it's there's a
appropriation
geeks who drink trivia that's all over the place, and so it's it was actually a really cool bar. It's called it was at Net Bar off. It's a couple blocks off Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome outdoor space. Yeah, it's great, but straight bar.
Got it. Oh. Golden Girl trivia. So it was a trap. Were you disappointed in the fourth place?
I didn't really care. I just thought it was fun. So I'm not very competitive and like whatever.
A little bitter? Just a little bit.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
No? Like,
yeah. He didn't sleep all night.
Yeah. Oh, no.
What about you, Kendall? Anything exciting happen?
Game of Thrones series finale. Is the embargo
lifted
on that?
How did you feel about it? I do not watch it, but everybody was a little...
I thought it was good.
I still haven't seen
it. I'm going to be the only person on Earth that thinks it's good. But I thought it tied up all the loose ends.
Loose ends.
Except these at the table.
Hello.
No, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
But since one of us hasn't seen it.
You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a nice job of like avoiding. Like, I think I have an idea of some of the things that happened, but for the most part, I think I did a nice job of avoiding all the major
spoilers.
Most
people that I know don't post anything specific. They just post like, oh my God, that was crazy, or underwhelmed. Yeah.
I was listening to a radio show where they were talking. They kept referencing it. I was like, I was the only time on I-45 where I was happy my satellite radio was going out, because it always on I-45 inevitably and I-10. So like all the major arteries here in Houston, my satellite radio will go out. Which Spencer all the time is like, why do you pay for this stuff if it's going to cut out? Especially on the major like freeways, which is when you want satellite radio. But anyways, it was the only time I was happy that it kept cutting out, because they kept referencing Game of Thrones, and I was like, no. So, I haven't seen it, but I'm looking forward to binge watching it. All right. So it was
and then
good
purging
week.
Afterwards.
And purging afterwards. So good week then, overall?
Good week, yeah.
Yeah.
Flew by.
An interesting week, but I guess technically, I guess when this is coming out, we would have known who the winner is of RuPaul's Drag Race, but in truth, in terms of how we're recording this, we don't quite know yet, but I'm sure it'll be very exciting nonetheless.
So the finale is next week?
Yes.
It's coming?
Yeah. Gotcha. So that'll be something we'll have to kiki about soon, because I've become a fan.
I may actually need to watch it this week so I can speak about it.
Do
you think it's going to be Dame Edna or Divine?
Both. It's going to be a tie. It's going to be the first tie. Actually, I didn't used to watch it. Like, I used to laugh at it a lot, because Kendall, you and Martha would watch it, and I was like, this is crazy. But now Spencer...
You judged.
Spencer, I did judge. I did. But now Spencer is, like, obsessed with it. And because he's younger, like, he looks at it differently, because a lot of people, I think you were like, oh, these are my friends. Like, you knew some of these drag queens, Kendall. And, but now Spencer looks at it like an art. And so, like, I'm dissecting what they're doing. And I'm like, I could do that. So I'm not making my appearance anytime soon. But
I feel
I'm
that's like looking at an artist's piece of work. I'm like, oh, I could do that.
Well, I couldn't do it as well. I sure as hell couldn't do all those flips. But I've observed like the techniques they're doing. So I've studied it like a science,
You would look like the maid from Family Guy, the one that says,
I couldn't do that. I don't want to minimize any of the drag queens' work that they do. They work really hard. I've come
Thank
to appreciate
you.
That. Tony, are you a drag queen? We didn't know this.
No, I'm just supportive.
What's your drag name?
I don't know.
What would your
drag
name be?
I don't know.
You don't know. I said mine was going to be Jenny Tonics.
Tony the Pony, because he has a horse dick.
that would be accurate.
What was yours?
You, Kendall.
What was yours, Kendall? Christmas candle?
Well, my dad gave me 1,000
Did you
drag names. No, but when I was a little kid, he started calling... Okay, so my name's Kendall. So it turned into Christmas candle, which turned into Christmas chandelier, which turned into Christina, which turned into Chris, which turned into Chris Christofferson. It just morphs, you know. There might be some kind of mental disability that runs in the family.
You too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think I have it.
Hashtag you too.
Yes.
So basically, my preacher dad gave me, I don't know how many drag names growing up, and then wonders why I'm gay. Thanking you.
Thank you.
Blame dad. There we go.
Thanks, dad.
We do thank your dad. Like, what would the gay community be missing out on if Kendall wasn't out? If he was dating a married to a woman, yeah. Be married to a woman having kids.
Can you imagine?
Poor kiddos.
That would be funny. All right. So let's talk about some gay stuff, huh? So on June 5th, 1981, so almost 40 years ago, the Center for Disease Control, so the CDC, released an article which basically reported the first known cases of HIV/AIDS. So they have this morbidity and mortality weekly report, and they described a rare lung infection called, I won't pronounce the medical name, but it's known as PCP, and five young, what were previously healthy gay men in LA. They all had unusual infections, indicating that their immune systems were not working, and two had died at the time the report was published. And so this kind of stirred some thinking amongst the medical community once this was published. Immediately after, they got notified of more cases of more gay men in LA, New York, San Francisco, with similar issues. And so they saw a cluster of cases of rare and unusually aggressive cancer, Kaposi's sarcoma among, again, several gay men. So this basically, these were the first cases. So at the time they weren't, you know, they didn't call it HIV/AIDS, but later these five cases were reclassified as AIDS cases. Pretty heavy stuff. I mean, with AIDS, I mean, so 1981, the crisis is breaking out. Since then, it's severely impacted not just the LGBT community, but the world at large. I mean, they've had 70 million cases of HIV reported since 1981, and over 700,000 deaths just in the U.S. Across the globe, 35 million people have succumbed to AIDS. So, pretty heavy stuff, like I said. Today, well, at least last reported by the CDC, nearly 37 million people living with HIV, AIDS worldwide, and daily, I mean, folks get still infected with HIV. There's 40,000 cases reported per year of HIV. So still a severe issue that impacts, again, not just the LGBT community, but the community at large.
Well, it shows a lot how far we've come, actually, to we're describing them as living with HIV instead of dying of HIV.
Yeah.
Because I'm 36, so I was right at that age to where the news of AIDS was everywhere. And when you came out of the closet, when I did at 15, my parents said, I don't want you to get AIDS and die, and I don't want someone to kill you because you're gay. Like, AIDS was just over everything. You could not take the concept of being gay and AIDS and divide it.
Right, I agree, yeah.
They went hand in hand. And we're not to that now. It's basically not for everyone, but if you take your meds and you have access to healthcare and all that, it can be a chronic disease, which before it was a death sentence.
Death sentence, yeah.
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 Yeah, in the 80s and 90s, it just wiped out people. I mean, the 80s was pretty significant. In the 90s, you started to see not the rate at which new cases were reported wasn't as significant. I think the total number of cases or deaths kind of hit a peak in 2004. There were like 1.9 million cases of AIDS reported, which was pretty significant. But again, to your point, we've come a long way, right?
So yeah, and I feel like, you know, now, like, people are living with it. And now it seems like the medicine is not as harsh. Like, the first real medicine that helped, like, arrest, you know, the reproduction of the virus and everything was so harsh on the body, and there was, like, massive number of pills and this cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Yeah,
and so now, you know, it's a lot more manageable, and it's less side effects and things like that. So it's. Yeah.
But the stigma of AIDS and HIV is still.
Oh yeah.
We're still recovering from that.
It's interesting because I feel like in like 10 years ago, it started to like people. The stigma wasn't. The stigma's always been there, but people were making jokes of it. I remember watching a TV show, a sitcom, and they were making, I don't want to go there because my baby's going to get AIDS. But they said it in the context of a joke. But I think now, given the sensitivity of where we are now, I think folks, you maybe couldn't make a joke like that now. I mean, again, people still do, but it's just yeah, the stigma still persists, right?
You know, one thing that's interesting I feel about the stigma is I feel the stigma is out there, and it is. It exists. But, you know, one of my friends, like, I went on a ski trip with a group of friends, and so this one lady, she was talking to us, and she was like, oh, you know, like, how do you feel, like, if you met somebody and they were HIV positive, would it be a deal breaker? And so, like, my friend and I were both like, no. I mean, in this day and age, like, you know, with medicine and protection and whatever, it's like, you know, if somebody's, like, undetectable, it's, like, almost essentially, like, you know, not having it. And so it wouldn't be an issue for me. Whereas, but so it's weird that, like, as far as we've come, and I mean, I feel we are kind of on the verge of almost a cure. They're testing, like, a vaccine and clinical trials and stuff. That there is still the stigma of, you know, that's out there. It's kind of weird.
I mean, yeah. I had a exposure incident, and I immediately went to, like, the doctor the next day to get PEP because I was, like, I was, you know, paranoid. But, I mean, it's not to say that it's I want to get it, which I don't, but because I don't think anyone does. But it's still, like, all these red flags. It's like, you know, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What if I get it? But, you know, to your point, like, nowadays, if I, you know, dated someone like that, then I think I would be okay with that. If you would ask me 5 years ago, I'd have been like, definitely no. But now, as I've become more educated on the disease and the healthcare support that's out there, then I definitely wouldn't be as big an issue now.
Yeah. It is interesting, too. So I feel like because it's so prevalent in the gay community, we're not really forced, but we're just automatically, like, more educated than I think the general population about it. And it's interesting because I was with a group of straight friends about 2 years ago, and the subject came up. And, you know, when I said, it wouldn't be a deal breaker for me, like, if there was this open discussion and everything. But two of my straight girlfriends, they were like, absolutely no. If somebody has that, wouldn't even consider dating them.
Yeah, it's different, like you said, because I went to two different doctors. So a couple years ago, I had mono, and I was going to a straight doctor, and she, when I was telling her about kind of my sexual history, she was kind of taken aback, and then because what she didn't know, we didn't know I had mono, so we went through all these things. First, she thought I had a sinus infection, so gave me medicine for that. Then she thought I had the flu and gave me stuff for that. And then she was like, before she went down the you have mono, she was like, oh, you have HIV. She's like, you likely have HIV. You need to go get tested for that. And I was like, whoa. And so I got tested, came back negative. But I was like, and then she's like, oh, I guess you have mono. Like, it wasn't, I mean, not in that. But it was just, but when I was talking to her again about my sexual experiences, she was very much like I said, taken aback.
Judgmental, yeah.
When I was debating on when I was actually going to get on PrEP, because I was newly single, I was like, and I wanted to be cautious. I went to a gay doctor, and they were very much more supportive and nurturing and kind of talking about it in a very, like, nurturing sense versus that straight doctor, which I will never go back to.
Okay, so who here used condoms recently 100% of the time when you're single? You know, I mean, there's even ignorance within the gay community.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I'm not saying I haven't had specific instances where I didn't, but I mean, 99% of the time I do. Because it's, I don't know, I'm just paranoid about it. But
yeah, and me too. Like, well, it's not just HIV, it's any STD. Obviously, well, I grew up, you know, as a Catholic too, so although Catholics aren't supposed to use them, like, I was scared because I come from a long family of teenage pregnancies and I have had sex with women, and I was always paranoid, so it was like, I'll never do anything without a condom. So, but yeah, but like you said, even still, we get lax.
And once you introduce alcohol,
yeah, sometimes you're like, did I?
Like, what the hell's a condom?
If you loved me, baby, you wouldn't make me put on a condom.
And then you're like, what's your name? Get out of my car. But, I'm not wearing a condom.
We've come a long way. I mean, it's not that it's perfect, but in terms of the stigma, the access to healthcare. I mean, you have things like the Affordable Care Act that have helped us come. You know, now we have access to healthcare. You've got things like legalized gay marriage, so you can have access to healthcare through your partners. But a long way since the 80s, when old Ronald Reagan was the president, which coincidentally, on June 5th of this week, in 2004, Ronald Reagan passed away. Of course, you know,
who I am obsessed with.
Well, I know.
All this week.
Good or bad?
Okay, so I'm obsessed with all presidents. They're fascinating to me. So I don't look at it like the worst president could be just as fascinating as the so-called best president. Yeah. But lately I've been watching a lot of Reagan videos just to figure out who he was and really when the Alzheimer's set in. And he's just very interesting. And I'm trying to see the parallels between Trump. Like, how engaged is he?
You think Trump, you're trying to see if he's got Alzheimer's? Or
well, people like my dad say Trump and Reagan are the two greatest presidents this country will ever see. And I'm like, but on paper, they're not that alike.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, I honestly think Trump has some kind of mental issue. I think Reagan got dementia, but I think before that, I don't think he had a lot of mental issues.
No, not mental issues, but when did that dementia set in? Because it's not like day you wake up and you don't know.
No, I think it started to set in mid-presidency.
Well, I think it's fascinating.
I think a lot of people admit that he started to get forgetful, and that's why he was kind of the...
But that could also be like somebody in their late 70s.
It could be.
Yeah. Like Bernie Sanders.
Oh, did you see what happened like this recently with the, speaking of old people, where they're talking about Fox News and the president and Trump are talking about Nancy Pelosi and how she's got
the doctored
fake
slurring video.
They're talking about it like it's real. And then like I think the campaign against her is genius from like it's evil and bad for society. But in terms of what they're trying to do, and because then I see on Twitter all these people saying, oh, my gosh, Pelosi, she needs to step down. They've created this
Nancy can't be bothered
of that she's sick. And so that's going to continue with her.
And I would say this, even before any of this, like being from a rural state that, you know, they don't like the liberal whatever. In a lot of those places, all the Republican or Trump has to say about like a congressperson, et cetera, is they're going to vote with Pelosi, so vote against him.
Right, from that
and
liberal
that, and
San Francisco.
And so now if you add this, we're like, oh, now she's sick or whatever. I mean, yeah.
We've come a long way from Reagan. When Reagan, obviously, with Reagan, with the whole AIDS crisis, not high on the LGBT community's spectrum. He didn't mention the first cases of AIDS until 1985. Like, so I went back and watched that press conference
85?
In 1985 when he was asked about it, and I was looking.
I thought it was 89.
Those dementia things, yeah. So he mentioned it in 85. They asked him like, are you doing enough? And he said, yeah, it's the number one priority of my administration. It's a top priority with us. He said, yes, there's no question about the seriousness of this and the need to find an answer. So he started off with a – I mean, granted, 1985, different than 1981. I think, you know, started off with good
answers. He was just ignorant. He is not exposed to what being gay was. To him, it was just a scary, like, you can choose to do that or not. I have a book of his letters he wrote for like from the time like 1930s to, do you have that too?
Yeah.
And in it there's a portion where he talks about gay people and I forget what it was, what context, but it's kind of like we need to have compassion, but it's also mental illness. And at what point do you hate somebody for thinking that and able to separate? Well, they just don't know any better. Yep. It doesn't make them any less dangerous to gay people in general.
But the thing is, so even if he doesn't know any better, I feel if there's a health crisis facing the U.S., for example, like Ebola, the government was full stop, we need to arrest this shit and get it taken care of. And so regardless of your personal feelings on it, if there's a health crisis facing the country and you're the president.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, in which he failed to do. Like, so again, he answers the question, right? Yeah, there's no question about the seriousness of it. But then, like, pressed against it, saying, hey, you know, there's a scientist out there who's a big scientist within the, you know, the cancer research area and had invested a lot of research on the now on AIDS and HIV. They asked him, well, they're saying that this effort's not enough. And of course, what he came back with, he's like, look, I think within our budgetary restraints, it seems like the $126 million that we're giving to this is sufficient in a single year. Well, what he actually said is, I think with our budgetary restraints and all, it seems to me that the $126 million in a single year for research has got to be something of a vital contribution. So it's like he started off with the answer, okay, and then yeah. comes back, is like, but I think we're giving it enough money. And like the answer is no, right?
Well, the response to AIDS at the time by conservative Christians was, well, this is what happens when you
this is are God's sodomites. Answer to,
So God will sort it out. So his reaction really was, there's nothing we can do. This is your fault.
Yeah.
And God gave it to you because he needs to punish you, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
That's, to me, where his thinking was, which is horribly wrong. He was also almost 80 years old at the time and lived a completely different time. And it's tragic as it is. It's the way people thought back then.
Yeah.
And many people still do to this day.
Yeah. Well, and he was asked to, because at that point, Ryan Wright's case had been out too, and lots of kids being infected through blood transfusion. So he was asked, if you had younger children, would you send them to school with the child with AIDS? And his answer was, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that.
Oh, yeah.
So, which again was kind of like, is that
the lazy?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. So, I read Rock Hudson's biography, and he was really good friends with Nancy and Ronald Reagan. And so when he got AIDS, he too didn't want to be very public about it because, you know, he had this persona of like this macho guy. And so at the time, the leading medical technology was in Paris. And so he actually went over there for treatments. But in the book, they talked a lot about, Ronald Reagan wasn't doing anything. And so a lot of his friends were like, you need to talk to him because you're a good friend of his. And maybe if you talk to him, and he said, I won't. Like, kind of, that's not my place. I don't really
Nancy did, though. She was like, though.
But probably later, too. It was it was just kind of interesting that he didn't want to admit. And actually, he didn't want to go public with it. And they also said, you need to go public with this because if you can get it, America will think – because Rock Hudson was this beefy, you know, like dreamboat. And everybody thought – and he wasted away to nothing. And people said, you need to go public because if the public sees you and sees this is what it can do and if you can get it – and he wouldn't, but basically he had went to Paris for like, I don't know, he went there a couple times. So he went there for a final attempt at treatment. And when he came back, like they said, don't go back. Just, you know, we'll keep you comfortable until you. And that's when he, because somebody had wanted to write his biography and they wanted to include all this. Mm. And he said no. Mm. And basically when he was on his deathbed, he said, bring her in and have her write this.
Yeah. Huh.
You know who did accept him and tried to help him, and she just died last week.
Yeah, Doris Day.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there were all these articles about why isn't she such a huge gay icon because of how accepting and understanding she was. Doris Day, who was starred in I don't know how many movies with him, and had a talk show, and I think it was one of the last interviews he did.
Yeah. And so actually in his biography, they talked about that, and so she had, you know, done all these movies with him, they were good friends, and then she went to do the talk show, and so they didn't see each other frequently, and when he showed up for the interview, mm-hmm. she didn't even recognize him because he is just that thin.
Mm.
Yeah,
just, you know, on this again, what I would perceive as a tone deafness of Ronald Reagan. One of the things, so he had this press conference, right? Big deal, first time. I mean, he didn't proactively talk about HIV. Like, someone from the press corps asked him the question. So that's how it was kind of broached for the first time in public that he addressed it. His reflection, though, because I was just kind of poking around at different things, like, he writes about the press conference. And to me, I was thinking, oh, maybe he'll talk about it, because in the LGBT community's eyes, I think it was a big deal. It's like, finally he mentioned it. But his takeaway from that press conference that he wrote in his diary is like, oh, press conference went well. Early phone calls were 86% favorable. Most questions were coming on summit, some on trade. So nothing about, oh yeah, we got to address this HIV AIDS crisis. Yeah. So a little tone deaf. I know the conservatives, you know, praise him. You know, as a kid, my family's, you know, not conservative. They're very, I won't say very liberal, but more liberal.
Very Democrat.
Very Democrat, I guess it's the right way. So Reagan was not high up on our list either. So.
It is kind of interesting, AIDS thing aside. I do feel like all of my life, when anybody talks about Ronald Reagan, they're either he was the best president or he was the worst president. He's very polarizing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel that strongly about him now just because...
No, but I feel people that were... Right. Yeah, at the time. Yeah, yeah.
But because I do try to take an approach, like, you know, Kendall, you're talking in terms of studying them as leaders and whether they were effective or not and kind of their tactics versus just purely approval.
Well, part of the reason people loved him, white people loved him, is because he gave a lot of the dog whistles that Trump is now known for. His campaign slogan at one point was "Make America Great Again." That's not an original to Donald Trump. Right. Donald Trump stole that from Ronald Reagan. And he went to Klan places in Mississippi and talked about states' rights, which was a complete dog whistle to, like...
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So part of the reason why I think a lot of the same people that love Trump love Ronald Reagan is because he was giving that kind of, like, wink, wink, I'm going to keep this country white attitude.
And at the time, he was also a political outsider. He was an actor. He was governor of California, but people thought he could never be president. And actually, it was one or two elections. I think it was one election before he was actually elected that at the Republican National Convention, he was kind of getting a lot of momentum, but he kind of was like, he took the attention and was kind of, he didn't like shut it down, but eventually he was like, this isn't my time. Cause I think he knew he would be,
he knew Carter would win in 76.
Yeah, exactly. So he'd be back. And so, but he, but yeah, he was like a political outsider. And so I think that's also like similar to Trump.
I do want to say there was an article last week, I think it was Slate or Daily Beast, where they talk about it was confirmed that the first AIDS case was confirmed to be in the early 60s by a black boy. But we whitewash history so much. I mean, it's just easier to get people to feel sorry for and to think a white life is more important than the original AIDS, which is really a black person. So... are we ever talking about the huge AIDS epidemic in Africa? No.
Right.
Because we can't put that little Ryan White, who was that little boy who got it from a blood transplant, we can't put that face on it because we can't identify.
Similar to Ebola as well. I mean, like, once the Western world, it was no longer an issue. I mean, people were still dying by the droves in Africa. And, sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's true. One person got it or something. Like a handful of people got it in the U.S., how many people died in Africa?
Yeah, there were a couple. Yeah, exactly. And once it was eradicated in the U.S. and Europe, and it's like, okay, it's contained in Africa. People, I mean, they weren't doing anything about it. It was still,
The crisis all of a sudden subsided. Yeah. Such as the times we live in, huh?
Another great episode from the guys at Let's Talk About Gay Stuff. And an important reminder to always know your status. And with that... we're here, we're queer, get used to it.